From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Washington, D.C. shuts down hemp. Governor Abbott wants to zero out school property taxes and inside Texas politics.
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This week, when Congress passed the bill to reopen the federal government, tucked inside the legislation was a provision that outlawed hemp-derived THC products. In Texas, where hemp consumables have grown rapidly in recent years, the ban ends a major industry that generates nearly $5.5 billion in annual sales, which translates to $268 million in tax revenue. Some lawmakers, including Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, have said the industry is poisoning children and getting them hooked on drugs. But for many business owners who have sunk their lives into the hemp business, this new prohibition will wipe them out. It's the morning after the bill to reopen the federal government was passed by Congress and signed into law by President Trump. And at the 210 Double Vapes shop across the street from the Bexar County Courthouse, Mike Ballerini is opening for the day.
Yes, we're open.
Yeah.
210 is San Antonio's area code. Double it is 420. That's code for getting high. But the days are numbered for this store and about 9,000 others in Texas registered with the Texas Department of State Health Services to sell consumable hemp products. Ballerini said all those businesses are going to die, adding he wasn't surprised that much of his inventory will be illegal a year from now.
Pivot or die. All this stuff should have been compliant to begin with. If all this stuff was compliant to begin with, then we probably wouldn't be in the situation that we're in.
Ballerini is hitting on a key problem in Texas hemp shops. He says many of the products do not meet the state's legal requirements for hemp-derived cannabinoids. Non-compliant means the product breaks one or more Texas laws or regulations governing hemp testing, labeling, or THC content. On the wall, there's a sign that says, consume at your own risk.
So I have no sympathy for this industry at all.
Ballerini says he will be shutting down this store and turning his other hemp shop into a liquor store. But for others, switching business won't be so easy.
It's going to be devastating.
Kenneth Berner is a commercial hemp grower and owns two hemp shops in Galveston County. He says he's been following the law.
We focus on all natural hemp products. We don't try to bring in any of the other mess.
Berner says he's invested time, hard work, and his money into starting his business, and now he's watching it all go up in smoke.
I don't understand how we can legalize something, let everybody invest all their money into it, get it up and running, and then just strip it away from them.
Berner says the retail side of his business seems to be a lost cause, but he's not so sure about his hemp growing business.
They keep saying they're going to protect the farmers, so I'm not sure how that's going to affect us. But I do have a question I wish they'd answer. If you're going to protect me and allow me to grow it, that's fantastic. But who am I going to sell it to?
Berner said he was caught completely by surprise by the sudden move in Washington, D.C. to ban his products. He figured things were safe after the Texas ban was stopped, so he went all in on his business.
We had no idea that this was going to be a backroom, in the dark kind of deal where we suspend all Senate rules so that we can add regulatory language that kills an entire industry. We had no clue.
But Berner is more concerned about his customers who have come to rely on his products to deal with pain, anxiety, sleep issues, and PTSD. He said they don't want to go back to taking pharmaceuticals.
In fact, I would say 9 out of 10 people currently using legal hemp products are going to become criminals and be buying it from the black market because they do not want to go back. They don't feel they should have to. And I agree with them.
The U.S. Hemp Roundtable has stated that they will work during the one-year moratorium to push for a reversal or for science-based regulations similar to those for alcohol, which would include age verification, testing, and licensing. Berner said he's given up hope and doesn't believe Congress will be able to reverse the ban. Last week, Governor Greg Abbott announced he is running for re-election. If successful, Abbott would become the longest-serving governor in Texas history, surpassing Rick Perry. He launched a campaign by emphasizing conservative themes, maintaining Texas as a bastion of common sense, protecting Texas heritage and values, continuing economic growth, and cutting property taxes. At a recent event in Tyler, Abbott said rising property taxes are the main threat to affordability for Texas homeowners and argued the state must act aggressively to keep people from being, in his words, priced out of their own homes. Abbott said the state has already put a historic amount of money towards short-term tax relief, $51 billion in the last session, but he told the crowd that is a temporary cut and it's not enough.
Because what you've seen in the past is those property taxes just keep going up, and that's taking money out of your pocket. I'm here today to keep more money in your pocket.
His new plan has five components. First, he wants to cap local government spending to stop tax growth. Abbott said the root cause of rising taxes is local government spending. Because property taxes are set locally, not by the state, he wants to impose strict limits on cities, counties, and other taxing entities.
One way that you stop property tax increases is you stop the spending that leads to property tax increases. Yes. If you had no increase in spending, you would not have any increases in property taxes.
Second, Abbott is calling for voter approval with two-thirds threshold for any property tax increase. Abbott said homeowners face tax increases without knowing or approving of them. His plan would require every single property tax increase to go before voters. And not just a simple majority, he wants a two-third voter approval.
So I want to require 100% of every property tax increase must not only be voted on, but must be approved by two-thirds of the people who go vote.
Next, he wants to allow voters to petition to roll back property taxes. Abbott wants to give residents the power to force a vote on lower tax rates if 15% of registered voters sign a petition. That rollback election would be triggered.
Have you ever gotten your property tax bill and think, man, that's too high? That should go down. I want to give you, the people, the ability to vote on rolling back your property tax rates.
Fourth, change the appraisal system. Fewer appraisals and lower growth caps. Many Texans blame their rising bills on rising appraisals. Abbott wants to change how often they occur and how high they could climb. He proposes appraisals only once every 5 years instead of annually, capping appraisal increases at 3% per year, down from the current 10%.
Here's two reforms for appraisals. One, there's no reason for you to have to go through that appraisal process every single year. You get your appraisal, you protest it, all that kind of stuff. As opposed to having an appraisal given to you every year, that should be reduced to only one time every 5 years. Second, the way Texas law works right now, your appraisal can go up to as much as 10% a year. That's one reason why you see affordability issues. That has to be stopped also. We must cap that not at 10% a year, but lower that cap to no more than 3% a year.
And finally, Abbott says Texas needs to eliminate school property taxes. This is the biggest and most controversial part of Abbott's plan. He wants to reduce the school district portion of property taxes down to zero. School taxes make up the largest share of a homeowner's bill. Abbott says Texans should vote on a constitutional amendment to eliminate them entirely.
If you pay your property tax bill, you know that the largest part of your property tax bill is your school district property tax. That's what's forcing so many people out of their homes. That property tax should be reduced to zero. And importantly, it should be the voters who have a right to vote on a constitutional amendment to eliminate the school district property tax in Texas.
Critics warn that eliminating or dramatically reducing school property taxes creates a big funding hole for public education unless a replacement revenue source is firmly in place. One editorial in the Dallas Morning News called the plan irresponsible, and a column in the Houston Chronicle argued Governor Abbott's plan will starve public schools while he sends state money to private schools. For more on Abbott's plan and more on inside Texas politics, I'm joined by Scott Braddock, editor of the Quorum Report and host of Quorum Report Radio, available on all podcast apps.
Well, the governor laid out several things that he would like to do about property taxes in the 2027 legislative session. Some of his conservative critics have already said, since he announced this last weekend, David, some have already said, why doesn't he just call a special session now to do this now, if he's really serious about property taxes? This has become the number one issue with Republican primary voters across this state. As I travel everywhere from San Antonio to DFW, Houston, all the way over to West Texas and everywhere in between, and in some ways, it's become an even bigger issue to Republican voters than immigration. What I mean by that is that a lot of those voters think that the president's got that handled because they see on Fox News they're showing that the troops are in these different cities and ICE is rounding people up. And so in a lot of ways, the thing that's really impacting their pocketbook is what's rising to the top for a lot of people. The governor already this year, pushed for and got, alongside Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, some serious things when it comes to property taxes. The thing that's the most significant and most substantive for the vast majority of property tax payers is the increase in the homestead exemption. The Lieutenant Governor was saying at a press conference earlier this year that when he came into office, that was just a paltry exemption back then, more than 10 years ago. But now it's been boosted up to $140,000 for most property taxpayers, up to $200,000 for seniors and some others. And so there are entire neighborhoods that are being taken off the tax rolls. Some of that, of course, does complicate the budgets for local school districts. But when it comes to property tax relief, it doesn't matter that that stuff has been done. And you and I have talked about this before, I'm sure. But it also doesn't matter that a lot of local governments have seen their revenues capped and they have to go do these elections if they decide that they want to tax and spend more. But none of that assault on local government has resulted in property tax relief that is sufficient for Republican primary voters. And that is why I think the governor is stressing this in his reelection announcement. There are already some rumblings that he might get a Republican primary challenge, although I wouldn't, based on this issue, but I don't expect that anybody running against him is going to be successful because, of course, this is a governor that is going to start the year with about $100 million in his campaign account.
But if he gets his way, it seems like they're going to empty the coffers. Where is the money going to come from to pay for public schools?
The legislature, the last two legislative sessions, has put what they would say is record spending, record dollars into public education. But you're right. From the structural point of view, they're going to be dealing with less resources. And there's no real discussion among Republican leadership in Austin, including the governor, lieutenant governor, and the speaker, no discussion about how to rebuild the property tax system from the ground up to be able to pay for public education and also offer some people some relief. And, of course, you do have this sort of a dream of some conservatives that we could get rid of property taxes altogether in this state, but simply not possible without raising other taxes. I was looking at some numbers that were provided by a former estimator at the comptroller's office who said that Governor Abbott's plan would result in potentially as much as a 22% hike in sales taxes to try to cover the revenue that would be lost from what he's proposing. And so people are going to pay taxes one way or another. The question is it going to be something that's seen as more progressive or something that's more regressive? And it seems that the governor is basically supporting the latter at this point.
So regressive meaning low-income families are probably going to end up paying more in sales tax, and the people who own massive refineries and mansions will pay basically very little in property taxes.
That's one of the potential realities, although it's been my observation over the last 4 to 6 years that when it has been proposed that the sales tax should increase, it's not just you know, those progressive Democrats and others who push back on it. There's a lot of conservatives who don't want to see that either. And you might remember in the 2019 legislative session, there was a proposal to significantly increase sales taxes to try to buy down property taxes, and that was met with stiff opposition from conservative Republicans. So it's not just something that Democrats and liberals would be upset about, or people who would be low income would be upset about or hurt by. It's everybody, because everybody pays sales taxes.
Is Abbott only concerned about the Republican primary now, or is he also looking down the road at a strong general election challenge from a Democrat?
Well, we have no idea who the Democratic nominee is going to be. It's a crowded field, as you know. Several Democrats have announced. You have a Central Texas state representative named Gina Hinojosa from Austin who's running. Also, the son of the late Governor Mark White, Andrew White, is running. There's a guy from East Texas named Bobby Cole. Some other people I'm sure have announced and will announce before the filing period is over with. It's a wide open primary. Not sure who's going to win that. But in the state, you do still have to handicap it for the Republicans. And one difference in this campaign cycle, at least so far, David, has been that among political professionals, both on the Republican side and the Democratic side, I'm talking about those people who consult on some of these big campaigns, whether it's U.S. Senate, governor, state, lieutenant governor, state comptroller, whatever else it might be, none of them are trying to sell me on the idea that a Democrat can win statewide, no matter which one of the races we're talking about. Most of the discussion is all about whether it will be a bad year for Republicans, and therefore there might be gains for Democrats down ballot, that Democrats might gain seats in the Texas House or gain seats in the congressional delegation, et cetera. And so for Republicans, a lot of their effort's going to be put into trying to contain losses down ballot, while for the Democrats, they're going to try to maximize those gains if they can.
But there are a lot of big name Democrats who have an eye on the U.S. Senate race that'll be in 2026. Representative James Tallarico has been getting a lot of attention. Colin Allred, former congressman, he's announced he's running again. There's speculation that Beto O'Rourke might jump in the race. He's still having rallies. He's got a rally on Friday in San Antonio.
That's his thing. He loves doing it.
And now we're talking about the possibility of Congress member Jasmine Crockett, and that could upset the speculation that this could be a strong year for Democrats. I mean, she could possibly win the Democratic nomination. She's very popular and she's a good campaigner, but people are saying, well, but she might be a little bit too much for a general election win.
Well, I will say again that there's no serious conversation that I have heard about any Democrat in that race actually winning the race, whether it's James Tallarico, Colin Allred, Jasmine Crockett, or whoever. It would be my speculation that even the weakest of the Republican candidates, Attorney General Ken Paxton, would still win statewide. That said, I will tell you this. I attended two rallies in both Houston and Dallas in the last few days. One was hosted by California Governor Gavin Newsom in Houston. The other featured J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, in Dallas. And Jasmine Crockett, the congresswoman from Dallas, she spoke at both of those events. And get this, David, even though the guest of honor, if you will, in Houston was Gavin Newsom, and even though the guest of honor in Dallas was J.B. Pritzker, the one who got the biggest and strongest response from the crowd is Jasmine Crockett. She is the fighter right now, according to Democratic activists. They love her approach. She's a viral star and somebody who has been a prolific fundraiser. I think in her campaign account previously, there was north of $4 million, something like that. I'm sure she's raising a whole lot more now that she's making noise about potentially running for the United States Senate. And it's my understanding, from various sources, that this isn't just her making noise. It's not just a stunt to try to raise money. Although, look, I'm not going to make any predictions. Who knows how she's going to go on this? She can still run for re-election to Congress, or she could jump in the U.S. Senate race. But it's my understanding that she's genuinely kicking the tires on making a run for U.S. Senate here, which it wouldn't just sort of upset things. It would turn the race upside down. According to the polling, Tallarico has no chance and Allred has no chance if she gets into the race. The polling is so bad for them if she gets into the race that she could win outright without a runoff. And then what the general election looks like, look, on the Republican side, you've got an open field, basically, almost. You've got the candidate who has been in office for decades at this point, John Cornyn, who's underwater in some of his polling. You have the Attorney General Ken Paxton, and a congressman from Houston, Wesley Hunt, who is lesser known, but he seems to be making, some impact in the race, making some waves. And the incumbent, John Cornyn, has been sort of relentlessly attacking both Paxton and Wesley Hunt, because Cornyn's surest path to reelection is to win the Republican primary outright. And then every poll shows that Cornyn would cruise to reelection in November, as long as he can secure that nomination in March.
The reason why so many Democrats are jumping in the race, obviously, is because if Ken Paxton gets the nomination, he could be so damaged through all of the scandals that he has had that it could create an opening, a rare opening for the Democrats. And also, we saw last week during the Tuesday election across the country that Democrats did very well. Could it be a whole new ballgame?
It could. Look, with Paxton, he is uniquely scandalous. I'll say it that way. He has just had one scandal after another. And until now, you haven't had any campaign or any entity that was really able and had really had the resources to highlight his multiple scandals for voters on a consistent basis. But now you do. It's the campaign of the incumbent, Senator Cornyn, who is, going hammer and tong after Paxton, saying that character matters. And that Senator Cornyn and his campaign believe that Texans still believe that character matters. And someone who has had alleged multiple affairs and multiple financial scandals, et cetera, that someone like Paxton, in their estimation, cannot be the Republican nominee, or it's going to not only damage their chances at the statewide level, but also really to the point damage the potential for Republicans to win their down ballot races. I mean, in the congressional map that was just redrawn by the legislature, there are up to five new seats, opportunities for Republicans. However, if the Republican nominee in that Senate race, which will be the top race in Texas next year, if that nominee, that potentially being Paxton, really underperforms, I would say as many as three of those five new congressional seats, including some in South Texas, could go to the Democrats. And so that's the real worry for not just the Republican Party in Texas, but also for President Trump, because the whole deal with that redistricting, David, as you know, during the summer, was that President Trump was calling the Republican leadership in Austin, including Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, the Speaker of the House, and telling them and saying this on television as well, that he is entitled to five new seats in Texas, that Republicans need to keep their majority in the United States House. And one of the ways that they were going to do that was to redraw the congressional district, the redistricting map here in Texas. But you've seen that turn into an all-out redistricting arms race around the country, with California passing a new map to counter what happened in Texas, some other Democratic states doing similar things, and some other Republican states also doing their work on their side to try to even things up. And at last count, it looked like even though the president was trying to get an advantage here, it looks like, at least according to the numbers crunchers right now, that Republicans and Democrats might be basically dead even in that whole race to try to create more congressional seats for their respective parties.
The gerrymandering that happened in Texas, they drew the maps based on how voters voted in the recent presidential election with Donald Trump on the ballot. And we saw great gains for the Republican Party in that election with Latino voters. Looking at what happened in Virginia last week, we saw Latino voters back away from voting for the Republican Party. And the issue that some people say that in South Texas, the Latinos that voted for Trump are Trump voters and not necessarily Republican voters. And those Trump voters are starting to really regret that vote. So that could show a strong weakness in those gerrymandered districts.
It's possible, although I would say that Latinos in Texas don't vote the same way that Latinos vote in places like New Jersey and Virginia. What I mean by that is that you have Latinos south of Interstate 10 who base a lot of their voting on social issues as well, and not as much on the economic issues. That doesn't mean that those things aren't important to them as well. And we've seen some polling on this, as you suggest, as you alluded to. But I would say folks might want to go slow on that. The other thing that I would add is that when the president made big gains and flipped some counties in South Texas and the Rio Grande Valley in particular, that wasn't without a lot of work done by other Republicans previous to that. The governor, Greg Abbott, started to invest millions of dollars worth of Republican infrastructure in the Valley specifically, going all the way back to 2014, creating Republican infrastructure, Republican messaging. Governor Abbott also likes to travel to the Valley all the time. He's always doing events there, reaching out to voters and trying to flip those traditional Democratic-leaning voters over to the Republican Party. We have seen some party switchers down in that area, one judge and one state representative, for example, who switched from Democratic to Republican over the course of the last few years. And so when President Trump made those gains and had those wins in South Texas, the thing that I kept telling folks, David, is that the land for him was cultivated a long time before those headlines that we all saw in the New York Times and Washington Post saying that, you know, Trump was able to flip these counties. It wasn't without a lot of other folks doing a lot of investment and a lot of work first. And that's why I do think that the Republican gains in South Texas are probably more durable than some of the gains with Latinos that Republicans had seen around the rest of the country.
Another Texas election from last week on Tuesday, Texas Senate District 9, and we saw the Democrat Taylor Rimmitt 3% shy of a straight-up victory. Now he's in a runoff. People are looking at that and showing this isn't supposed to happen and trying to read things are changing with traditional Republican voters. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it shows an enthusiasm gap between Republicans and Democrats. When you have Democrats showing up in large numbers, relatively large numbers, in a deep red part of the state, that Senate district you're talking about is in the Fort Worth area. It's in the area around Southlake, Texas, which has been highlighted in national media as a hotbed of conservatism. This is not some liberal bastion that we're talking about. Deeply Republican part of the state, in which you saw from the last election for that Senate seat was in 2022. And 3 years later, you have an 8-point swing toward the Democrat who, get this, had almost no money to spend in this campaign. Meanwhile, there were two Republicans running in that race. Between those Republicans, there had to be at least, and I don't have a final count on this yet, but at least about $6 million was spent on behalf of those Republicans versus that Democrat who had almost no resources. And you had the Republicans come in second and third, respectively, in the race. There was also some grumbling among some Texas Democrats wondering why the Texas Democratic Party and other allied organizations didn't spend any money on that race, because maybe they could have outright won that seat. Just recently, in recent weeks, there'll be a runoff there. I would expect the Republican to eventually win, but I do think that it speaks to a huge enthusiasm gap, as I said, with Republicans just not as excited to get out and vote for their candidates. And in every one of these races, whether it was in Tarrant County, the one we're talking about, or some of these other races around the country, so much of it, if you look at the exit polling, it was that people were coming out to vote against the president, coming out to vote against Donald Trump and his agenda. And they saw this these elections, these off-year elections and the special election in the Fort Worth area. David, they saw it as a chance to do that.
Scott Braddock is the editor of the Quorum Report and the host of Quorum Report Radio, available on all podcast apps. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. You can download and subscribe to Texas Matters wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.